Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am here with somebody who's had a massive influence on my career, because if it wasn't for this man, I wouldn't have destroyed probably about 10,000 forks at this point. He literally revolutionized the genre, and he is an incredible performer. Everybody knows this man, the one and only Morgan Striebler. How you doing, Morgan?
I'm good, brother. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Mate, I'm so excited. Like, seriously, I remember way back in the day getting Liquid Metal for the first time and watching it and just saying to myself over and over again, this is a game changer. This is a game changer. And it really is. When I go into a gig, like I do wedding fairs where you don't get as many in the US, but we do wedding fairs where we like go and meet brides and grooms, and that's my bride and groom trick. The Liquid Metal is the trick that I do to get the bride and groom to book me for their wedding. Like, it's that strong.
Oh, wow. Thank you. You know what's funny is it turned 20 years old this month.
Man, now I feel old.
I do too. Yeah,
20 years
old. Yeah, I turned 20 this month.
And it's just as popular now as it was when you first released it.
That's a crazy thing. I can't ever top my first trip.
Well, it's not a particularly bad situation to be in. I mean, as a creator, we always look for that legacy item, don't we? That item that, because you know as well as me, magic comes and goes. You bring a trick out, it's hot news at the when it first comes out, and then a few weeks or a few months later, it disappears into oblivion and no one has even heard of it. But Liquid Metal has stood the test of time. It's that legacy item. It's going to be the thing that people get recommended. In 50 years' time, people are going to be saying, I want to get into metal bending. What do I do? Oh, you want to check out Liquid Metal. It's going to be around forever.
You know, and thank you. I hope so.
It really will. But you know what? I've wanted to get you on the channel for a long time. Just because I'd love to find out more about you. I mean, obviously, I've watched a lot of your DVDs and I've watched a lot of the material you've produced, and you're an insanely creative guy. But I thought we could find out a little bit more about the man behind the magic and kind of just look at your career and kind of how you got from where you started to here, and, you know, kind of look at what you've done along the way and all the different things you created, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Brilliant. Well, let's start, Morgan, at the very beginning. When did you get into magic? What's your origin story?
My origin story would be when my mother took me to see Harry Blackstone Jr. when I was a little kid. And I got to meet him and Miss Gay after the show, who I'm now good friends with. But I got to meet her as well after the show. And I bought a magic set from him. And I did that over and over and over. And then a couple of years later, I went to Vegas to see David Copperfield live. And that pretty much sealed the deal that I wanted to be a magician when I grew up.
Oh, wow. Talk about getting exposed to some amazing magic right early on. That's incredible.
It didn't get any better than that. And there was a story that came back around, which was pretty cool. When I lived in Vegas, one day, out of the blue, the phone rings, and it's Chris Kenner, and he calls and he says, David wants you to come and perform for him and the crew after the show. And he wanted to see Liquid Metal.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's one of the highlights of my career, is getting, I performed for hundreds of celebrities, but David was one of a kind.
Yeah, I'm talking about bringing it full circle. Wow, that's incredible. That's amazing. So you saw some incredible magic. You saw David Copperfield. the magic bug bit you. How old were you at this point? Were you at school?
Yeah, I was about 8 or 9. And by the time I seen David, I was probably 12. And that's about when I met up with my first mentor, who was a female magician in the area. Her name was Jeannie Williams. And Miss Jeannie had tons and tons of magic props. And she gave me access to pretty much her full inventory of items to create shows. And she'd talk to me and teach me about magic and presentation and how presentation was more important than the trick itself and or the effect that you're doing. It's the presentation behind it. She said, you can take any trick and make it a great trick as long as you have good presentation. And I believe that for the most part to be the truth. I mean, I think you could take about anything with a good presentation and make it a good trick. One of my big effects that everybody loved in Vegas was the sponge bunnies because of how I did it. And it was a comedic approach to it, very Tom Greenish, but it's just the point I'm getting at is you can take anything and add a little bit of flair and stuff to it and really make it your own. And I think that's the important lesson that I learned from Miss Jeannie.
That's a really, that's a really, really good advice. And sometimes I think magicians forget about presentation. They focus so much on the technical side of things and, oh, look, I've just learned this 15 phase false cut flourish thing, that they forget that the thing that people really buy into is being entertained. And that comes a lot of the time from presentation.
Yeah, I agree. And at the end of the day, if you can take somebody, especially in the world we live in today and the climate right now, if you're fortunate enough to perform live, which I actually just secured a residency at a haunted mansion called the Lent Mansion in St. Louis. And they, I get to actually perform for real people again. And it's amazing. And it's like, relish that moment when you get back into it, because we've been quarantined and locked off so long and trying to do virtual shows and do this and that. When you actually get back into it, really relish it, because it's almost like starting over again and that magic bug biting you all over. I really have enjoyed coming back after this extended hiatus.
Yeah, it's nice that the world feels like it's opening up again now, doesn't it? It feels like, and I think that you're going to have people really wanting to book entertainment because they've been starved of it. So I think that more and more people are going to book entertainment moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And, it's already starting, and it's just going to get better and better. I think the more the world opens up, hopefully it opens up soon, because that's where about 98% of my work comes from, is overseas. And because I'm on the road quite a bit, and I haven't been hardly anywhere. I've been to 3 countries in a year.
Yeah, it's been really tough, isn't it? Well, let's go back into your career. So you have this mentor, and she was helping you put together acts and talking to you about presentation. Did you go straight from education into being a full-time magician? Did you have like a proper job at any point, or did you go straight into being a...
No, I had a job. I worked at a restaurant called Lambert's Cafe. I did that when I was young, 16 years old, 17 years old. And I quit and started doing theaters in the area. I started saving up my money, and with the help of my family, my mom and my dad, I put together a somewhat decent size illusion show. And then I started performing that around the area and doing schools and theaters around the local market. And essentially, by the time I was 21, I had outgrew this market so much that it was time to take that next logical step in my mind, which was Vegas. And that's when I got slapped in the face with reality, that everybody thinks they're ready for Vegas and they're not. You got to go somewhere and you got to be bad first. And that's the best advice I ever got. And it was from a good friend of mine named Tyler Knight. He said, you got to go somewhere and you got to be bad. And ironically enough, that's where I met my next mentor, Franz Ferrari.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I obviously know Franz. That's what a mentor to have.
Yeah, Franz is a good friend of my mentor in Illusions. And I do Franz's show when Franz can't do a show. So I'm like one of Franz's mini-me's. And I'll go do the show in Asia if he's got to be in Europe or whatever. He can't be there, I'll go do the show. And he's got several of us that do that. And at one point, when I first started getting heavy into Illusions, he poured 20 to 30 years of knowledge into me in a matter of months. And he didn't hold back, and he just really groomed and molded me and made me a strong, strong entertainer. I watched every video of every performance I did. I was doing 5 shows a day, 450 shows in 3 months at places, and I was watching every single show. Every single show, I'd fix one thing that I didn't like. And then eventually, I became a very strong illusionist, and I've took some of that, and I was ready to come back to Vegas, and then the market fell out in 2001, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The market fell out of Illusions, pretty much, and big shows. It was hard. No, it was 2003, because I had just shot my demo video in 2001. My dad had built me a brand new illusion show, and it was massive, massive illusions, semis and stuff. And it's a multi-million dollar show. I still have it today. It's in my warehouse. And if I ever decide to go out and do illusions again, they're there. So if not, they're for my kids one day. But, and my youngest son, he's more into close-up. My oldest son, ironically, is into stage, and he has done the illusion show several times, which is kind of cool. But not to get too far off topic, where were we?
You'd been performing with Franz Ferrari, doing 450 shows a year, and then you put together a brand new show.
Which that was Vegas. In 3 months.
Wow. In 3 months. Wow.
5 shows a day, every day, without a day off for 3 months.
Talk about, like, trial by fire. I mean, you're going to get good with that much flight time. You're going to get good, and you're going to get good quick, right?
Yeah, you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice but to get good. Especially when you got him there critiquing and pointing out errors. And then you get to where you can see what's wrong on video. Well, I'm, you know, got the walk needs to be a little bit different here, or I need to turn a little bit different here, or, and you just start fixing little things and tweaking things, and by the end of it, it's pretty much about as flawless as you can get it without it being another performer of a higher skill level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's the same with every show, though. Now that I have that knowledge and that information that he passed along to me, I can apply that to my close-up. I can apply it to, like, he taught me how I can transcend the barrier of language, which is how I got into the clubs. I had to transcend that language barrier doing illusions and be able to connect with these audiences overseas that don't speak English. So when I went into the nightclubs, people couldn't hear me perform. So I took some of that stuff and I took it with me to the nightclubs. And when I went to the nightclubs, I started performing magic so visually and slow and just meticulously. If I needed to see somebody's finger, you know, I'd pan them out. I mean, and it was just, it was like I was talking to them and they understood everything and I wasn't saying a word. And I got a lot of that from performing overseas.
Okay. Well, what advice would you give somebody who's watching this that wants to get into illusions? Because you are right, the bottom fell out of it, but these days more and more, you know, people are getting into wanting to perform on stage and do bigger shows. Is there a advice that you can give somebody?
Yeah, yeah. Best advice I can give you is put together a show, a strong 30-minute show, and try to get into a theme park. And by getting into a theme park, you're going to start doing a lot of shows quick and a short amount of time as well. And if you can get there reoccurring, I mean, the pay's not great in theme parks, but it's also, it's not that bad either. I mean, it's bad if you break it down for a per show basis, but if you look at the experience, that's invaluable. You can't get that anywhere. You can't buy stage time. No. You should be paying the theme park. If you want the truth, I should have been paying Franz, not the other way around. Mm. He made me great. I didn't make him anything except, I mean, I filled in a spot for him that he could have had a number of other people do. So, I mean, somebody's got to get that theme park gig. Why not it be you? Or go try to book your show overseas, get a promo clip. Put together footage, but don't fancy edit it. I did that in the beginning. I had fancy edits and clips and stuff like that. They don't want to see that. They want to see a straight performance and they want to see what they're getting and what they're buying. So don't try to make it flashy. I mean, have it clean, corporate, and in my opinion, I mean, I could be wrong, but if I'm going to book an act, I want to see the entire routine.
Yeah.
I'm not saying do an entire show on the thing, but you can have montages and then show a full trick from beginning to end or illusion from beginning to end so they can see your sense of movement, your style, your flair, how, you know, you engage and the chemistry between you and your assistants and stuff like that. And have that on there. And I wouldn't make it any more than 2 minutes.
Okay. That's really good advice. It's very interesting because you see on the Facebook and on various groups, people going, oh, you should never go out and do free shows or cheap shows. You should set a price and stick to it. But, you know, I agree with you. If you want to get flight time and you want to get good, especially doing an illusion show, you need to go out there and you need to do it over and over again. And, you know,
in the beginning, don't let, that's pro advice. You get a level of a rate that you charge, and you know what? You can stick to that rate. When you're starting off at the bottom, you need that experience. You need that flight time. You need to be under the gun constantly where you're on stage and on point and getting to where you can do that show like in your sleep. And when you go back to Vegas or you go back to Branson or you go back to Myrtle Beach or you go wherever you're going to go, it's going to be second nature to you.
Yeah. Brilliant advice. Really good. So you went back to Vegas. So you'd worked with Franz for a period of time.
Still do.
Okay. But you then went back to Vegas with your own illusion act. So your dad put you together this huge, massive illusion act. You went back to Vegas and you found that the bottom had fallen out of the illusion show market. Less people were booking big shows. Your plan was to go there and do an illusion act. You turn up, that suddenly becomes like it's less likely to happen. What do you do?
Well, here was the thing. It wasn't that it was, people were still doing it, but the whole town had turned a four-wall in, where if you're not familiar with the four-wall situation, a four-wall situation is where you come in, you rent the room, you pay for advertising, and you are out every single cost in it, and the theater has done, and then they get a commission of you buy the room out for X amount of dollars, and you get to keep ticket sales. But that's what four-walling is, and I didn't want to do that. So I went to an agent. I met with her. She said, if you want to work in Vegas, you got to do something different, something unique from everybody else out there, because everybody's doing the same illusions and everybody's doing the same close-up tricks. Everybody's doing an ambitious card. If I see one more ambitious card, and she went on, but she's bottom line, she said, if you want to do Vegas, you got to have something different. So I was interested in metal bending at the time because of, my favorite movie, The Matrix. And I wanted to come up with a routine that was just so different, so out there, that if you could really bend metal with your mind, this is what it would look like. And I just took about 150 to 200 forks and I just started bending them crazy shapes and designs until I found the one that I wanted. And I decided on one that has my hair for the times. And my face is the front of the fork, my neck is the corkscrew, and then it's my body and me sitting down. And that's the liquid metal fork. And now that I had the design, I had to get from point A to point B, which was a whole different nightmare. And that took some trial and error and a lot of trial and error, actually, because not only did I have to get the moves, then I had to find the best direction and the blocking, and the, and it, that routine took a long time to come up with. But once I did it, funny enough, when I was working on it, my wife was like, that sucks, nobody's gonna like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Me.
She actually said I was wrong on that one. But in the beginning, she was like, that sucks, nobody's gonna like it, because she didn't see the vision, because I had to figure out the moves before I could put in the blocking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm gonna put this bend in like this, and then it was in my mind how I wanted to do it, and then I had to block it, and then I had to get every little nuance right with the spectators. And then, I mean, there was just so much work that went into that routine. And once I thought it was perfect, I put together about six or seven other routines, and I tackled the nightclub market. And right before I did, I was at a little lounge called the Shisha Lounge, and it was a hookah lounge, and I was doing my mentalism there, and people were enjoying it. And this friend of mine come in and he said, I got this opportunity, this gig for you. And I was like, sure, what is it? And he was like, it's at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch. And I was like, okay, cool. So we, and my wife and my friends and their, his girlfriend at the time, and my manager and his wife, we all went to Neverland Ranch. And I remember there being this long line of people and at the gates, and because they were checking entry. And then we were in around everybody because they told us to come around because I was performing. And I got to cut in front of everybody in line, which was really cool at Michael Jackson's house. And I did that gig. And then that led me to the most infamous performance I ever done, was Pablo Escobar.
Right.
Are you familiar with Escobar?
Yeah.
So I performed for his Pablo. Yeah, that was fun. And then after that, that person actually that connected that gig hooked me up with a connection at Bellagio. So I went to Bellagio and I met with the manager, the general manager there at the Caramel Lounge, which is a very, at the time, I don't know if it still is, but it was a very, very upscale ultra lounge.
Yeah.
And it got frequented by celebrities nightly. And I remember going in there and he was like, you know what? I'm not going to hire a magician. And I was like, well, what I do is not really magic. It's more mentalism. And it's a little bit different than what you've seen. And he was like, yeah, I'm just letting you know, we're probably not going to hire you. And I was like, well, do you at least mind if I perform it for these folks? And he was like, no, go ahead. So I did Liquid Metal. And they were like, oh my God, that's the best thing we've just seen, or we've seen him since we've been here. And we seen Cirque. The dude was like, you're hired. Come in tomorrow. So I came in the next day and I worked there for 4 years.
Wow. I bet that was an amazing experience.
Yeah. And then from there, I also was working a job at the Hard Rock in a show. I was in a show there at the Hard Rock and called Beecher's Madhouse. I was there for a year. While I was also working at Caramel Lounge, I would do Beecher's and then I would go into the lounge after. And then I went from the lounge to a high six-figure a year mentalism job at Caesars, where I was making about 500 grand a year doing close-up magic.
Wow. That's incredible.
Well, I'd come up with a system.
Okay.
And I worked it out to where it was pretty much a moneymaker. It was a gold mine. They had 150 something VIP tables. So all these people are spending $1,000+ minimum a table, okay?
Yep.
I told the head of security I would give him a percentage of my take at the end of the night if he would have his VIP host pitch me to the client saying that he's a celebrity magician or mentalist and he, you know, it was hard to get him over here, but I might be able to do it if, you know, you take care of him. And he wanted to make as much money as he could, so he had them hype it up. And you got 150 tables, and I'm wearing an earpiece at this point because it had gotten so big that I'm wearing an earpiece. When you finish there, go to table 22, you know? And it grew into a massive, massive thing. And I ended up quitting because my mom got cancer and I moved home to take care of her.
And that's why you left Vegas?
Yes.
Man. Family first, right?
Always.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I want to talk more about that, but let's just rewind to Vegas a little bit. Was it while you were in Vegas that you filmed the actual instructional DVD for Liquid Metal?
It is. I shot it with Penguin Magic when they were in a little warehouse off of Orange Springs, if I'm not mistaken.
What made you decide to release that? Because
I never wanted to release it, to be honest with you. But I had some mentalists and magicians that were coming in nightly to my lounge act, and they were trying to pick it apart and recreate it. And they couldn't figure out certain parts, so they come in every night. And I could see them with their notebooks, and they were writing down stuff. And I was like, you know what? If anybody's going to get credit for this, it's going to be me. I was like, I'll at least publish it and get the credit. Nobody may buy it, but at least it'll be out there. So because I was a no-name at the time.
Exactly. But so because you released Liquid Metal, but then off the back of that, you released a few other things as well. Spun was one that you released, and a few other bits and pieces with Penguin. It wasn't just one product, wasn't it?
The opener, the closer, Liquid Metal, Spun, Taste Conditions.
Was that all because, like, you said that you never intended to really release it. Was that the same with all the products, or did you release Liquid Metal and it got such a great reaction that you were like, well, let's see if we can do this again?
Well, like, I didn't know the extent of how big Liquid was until I went to Blackpool and I walked into Ruskin and everybody just swamped me and left and came and surrounded me. And I didn't realize. And Jay Noble's Asada was with me and he was like, holy shit. And we didn't realize how big Liquid was until then. And the impact it had had on the magic community and the overseas market too, as well. And then at that point I was like, well, I might as well put out some of my other creations now. My baby's out there, so what the hell?
Absolutely, absolutely. But here's the question. What made you carry on releasing magic? Because obviously you released a lot of this stuff while you're in Vegas. You're making a fortune doing close-up magic, making, you know, $500,000 a year. It takes time and effort to release a product, and you're never going to get rich from releasing a magic trick. I mean, did you kind of think to yourself, oh, what's the point? Or was it more about wanting to give back to the community?
I want to give back to the community. I love magicians in general, and I love our art, and I like to give back to the community as much as I can. And I even run deals and promos on my Facebook because I know there's a lot of people that can't afford my material or certain bits of my material. So I'll run a deal where I give everything away for a certain price. And I do that every now and then. And, you know, that's just to give back to the community and help those that, hey, man, I wish I could get that effect, but I can't get it. And I think that helps keep people from pirating your material as well, too.
Yeah. So before we move on to the next stage of your career, can I ask if you can give, as somebody who is one of the leading experts in the world on metal bending, have you got any, as we're talking about liquid metal right now, have we got any advice, or have you got any advice on metal bending, or for people that are wanting to get into metal bending? Because I see so many people doing metal bending and it looks just like what you're doing. It looks like they're just bending metal. But when you do it, it just looks like it just melts apart. I mean, it's just incredible. So do you have any advice on that?
Yeah. Do it over and over and over and over as many times as you can before you go out and do it for somebody. And really learn the subtleties behind it and learn the misdirection and the reveal. I mean, I've been over 70,000. I think I'm at 70,000 forks now that I've bent in my career. And the thing you want to make sure of, if you're going like this and you're jerky with your movement, be fluid, be slow, be intentional. I can put a bend in like this just as quick as I can put a bend in like that, where it's all fast. And work on that reveal. The reveal is really where it's at. And I mean, because that's the believability part. You got to sell it. And the only way you can sell it is to really practice it a lot before. A lot of people think, oh, wow, technically this is easy. Yeah, technically it is, but it's a lot harder to sell to the public as what you're doing is quote unquote psychokinesis if you don't put the time and effort in learning the psychology and the blocking and the other formula that goes with it.
Okay, that's really good advice. And other than liquid metal, are there any of your other products that you can recommend? Like, I remember Spun being an incredible routine. That's the one where a coin, you do a coin bend as the coin's floating, don't you?
Yeah. Spun's cool because it's a signed coin. You borrow a coin, have them sign it. It floats, spins, and then it bends in midair between your hands. That's a really fun routine to perform, and it gets great reactions. And believe it or not, that's a good one to do for a TV audition. Because it's very flashy, showy, and it catches the producer's eye really quickly.
That's really good advice. Now, let me ask you a question about Spun, because I know you've performed that for years and years and years. Now, you openly consider yourself more of a mentalist than a magician. But isn't that routine kind of verging on magic because you've got the coin floating in the air? Does it take anything away from the mentalism when you do it, or do you think that doesn't matter?
I think as long as the performance is good. I think people get too caught up in mentalism, magic, mental magic, instead of entertainment. I think what we should be doing is entertainment. Yeah, you can sub-level it into magic, mentalism, mental magic, crap. I mean, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, it should be entertainment and entertaining your audience. And I guess from a purist mentalism point of view, yeah, it definitely took away from it because it was more magic-y. It was definitely mental magic. And the reason it has the mental magic in there is because it did in fact bend.
Yeah. And the method behind it is incredible because you're not actually, for anybody who hasn't seen Spun, you're not using a gimmick or anything like that. They are genuinely signing a coin, and with no gimmicks or anything, that thing bends. It's incredible. The method behind
it. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it really is. So one last question about Vegas. There's going to be people watching this and their ultimate goal is going to be, I want to go to Vegas. I want to make a living as a performer in Vegas. As somebody who went to Vegas, made a really good living and only left Vegas on your terms. Because let's be honest, how many people have gone to Vegas and had to leave because it hasn't worked out for them because Vegas has beat them? You went out, you made a good career for yourself, and then you came back, like you said, family first. It was your decision. You left on your own terms.
Yeah.
Have you got any advice on how to actually make it in Vegas?
I would go back to what that agent told me over 20 years ago. You got to find something unique, something different than everybody else is doing, and you got to be yourself.
Yeah.
And Vegas is like any other market. I just hit an untapped nut. The nightclubs. Now there's all kinds of people in nightclubs. But before that, there wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
In Vegas, anyway, there wasn't a lot of performers in nightclubs doing magic. It was me and another guy. And it was just a open market for me, pretty much. And you got to find your market. You pick the target audience that you want to go after, and you stay focused on that audience and that target audience. You don't waver. Like, as soon as the bottom fell out of the illusion show market, I decided I'm going to be a mentalist in the nightclubs. I pushed until I had that. I started off at a shisha lounge, a hookah lounge, and then I went up to the Bellagio, and I performed for, like I said, over hundreds and hundreds of celebrities. Funny story was, one night I was performing for a guy, didn't recognize him or anything as being famous, but I was performing for him and his friend, and they invited me to sit down, and we were talking, and it come back like, my dad and mom's gonna be here in a little bit. Do you mind doing some magic for my mom and dad? And I was like, no, just call me over whenever they get here and I'll be happy to come over and do some magic for them. And then when they called me over, I was like, holy shit. It was Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. I've been performing for Colin Hanks.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Only in Vegas, right? That's brilliant. So you left Vegas and you came back to look after your mom, but you obviously carried on performing as well.
Yeah, that's correct. I started traveling the world more.
Tell me about that. Doing shows, doing close-up?
Both.
Okay.
I do more stage shows. I do my stage minimalism show, and I do cons, Comic-Cons, and theme them superhero-wise, and do Superman Celebration every year and multiple different things. And it became just another little niche for me. And then I had started doing lecture tours and stuff like that. And I'd book shows in the same city or a workshop, master class, and just travel around doing that. And I just started doing a lot of different things. And it was interesting because my options were different. It was something different than what I'd been doing for the past 15 years.
Yeah. So you've traveled the world doing, magic. What's your favorite country that you've gone and performed in?
I would say New Zealand or Italy.
Okay. Okay.
I love Rome, Venice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
But I would say either New Zealand. I love New Zealand a lot. Australia was cool, but New Zealand held a place in my heart because me and my wife went there together and we spent about 2 weeks after my shows and just went to the South Island and just chilled.
That's great. That's fantastic. And what, and you say that you lecture as well. So you've been doing a lot of lectures. You've actually lectured at the Blackpool Magic Convention, haven't you? Which is...
Yes, I have.
Which, I mean, obviously is one of the largest conventions in the world. Was that a good experience?
Yeah, it was. Other than the fact that I was extremely, extremely jet lagged.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine you would be. Okay, fair enough.
Because I literally flew in and then, like, I got no sleep and I had to be on in 3 hours.
Oh man, that must have been terrible.
My flight got delayed, so I had to be on in like 3 hours. I had like 3 hours of time to get ready for that with no sleep.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
So it was one of my lower energy lectures, I'll say.
I can imagine. I'm surprised you were standing up, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. The older I get, I need sleep.
Well, here's the thing. You stopped working with Penguin Magic after...
I did.
Yeah. But you didn't stop creating. And since working with Penguin, you've obviously been lecturing and you started releasing magic with other companies as well. I suppose what out of the stuff that you've released since working with Penguin... Is there a particular product that you're particularly proud of?
DOA. I'm really proud of it. My Pulse Stop.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. No, Morgan, no.
You stop your pulse. Well, the spectator fills your pulse stop, and then you have a spectator fill another spectator's pulse, and it stops.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's probably one of my favorites that I've come up with. That, and I would say Molten, but Molten's not available right now.
And who were these released with?
Molten was released through me, and Illusionist carried several units of it. And then I quit making them. And Liquid Metal 2 come out through Illusionist, and then I signed on with Sans Minds several years ago, probably I'd say 7 years ago, 6 years ago, and I put out quite a few DVDs and products through them.
What was it like working for Sans Minds? Because obviously they're not really around anymore. And although they brought out some good stuff, they didn't have the best reputation amongst the magic community a lot of the time, did they?
You know what? They didn't. And it's a shame because I know that a lot of stuff went on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about. But Will was always really good to me. And Will's like a brother to me. I mean, he always will be. And I mean, he's busy. We don't talk much. I don't talk to them much because they're busy. But I mean, there's no love. I mean, it's not like we're mad at each other or anything like that. It just, they kind of close shop and I'm kind of going my new direction now.
Mm. And what advice would you give to somebody who's watching this that wants to be a creator releasing magic to the magic community? As somebody who's worked with so many, like you say, you've self-published, you've worked with Illusionist, you've worked with Penguin, you've worked with Sans Mind, you've worked with so many different companies. Do you have any advice when it comes to releasing magic and picking a company to work with or self-publishing and doing it yourself?
Yeah. Make sure the product is worthy of the price tag that you're charging and make sure that it's worthy to come out, because so many people are just so quick to have their name out there and be famous that they'll put out a subpar product when if they would have spent another 6 months on it, they could have made it a great product. And then, I mean, it's the difference between here's the difference in a year. The difference in a year is multiple bins or liquid metal. Take it to the next level before you put it out. Don't just put out stuff to put out stuff. Make sure it's stuff that you've tried and true and tested out in the real world and that it actually works and it's not a pipe dream. Nothing makes me madder than when people don't audience test stuff. And when people ask me to review something, I actually go out and do it, because if I'm going to be honest about a review and put my name on it, I want to actually have done the effect.
Yeah.
Like I remember, for example, Everybody Slammed Hole in the Head by Ben Harris. I don't know if you remember that.
That was quite a long time ago now. Those people that are watching this that don't know the effects, from memory, you had it was done outside and you have a shadow that you're casting, obviously, and then a hole appears in the head of the shadow. Is that right, from memory?
Yeah, and they can run their hand behind it. I love the effect personally, and I got great reactions with it.
I live in England where there's only 10 days of sun a year. So we don't get shadows very often, but I remember thinking it was a really creative idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really good. I liked it personally, but I mean, it can be a very awkward effect if you don't have that particular gimmick.
Yeah.
On a usual basis, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But, I mean, basically, if you want to put something out, make sure it's worth putting your name on, because it's going to live with your name forever.
Yeah. It's good advice. Really good advice. And how do you find inspiration? How do you get inspired to create a trick?
Man, I get inspired from everything. Music, TV, my kids will say stuff. Just random stuff will pop in my head. I'm also bipolar, so when I get my pole shift, I tend to be very, very creative, and I can come up with couple years worth of material in a period of a couple of weeks.
Right.
And like when I get manic, I can just come up with idea after idea after idea after idea, and then I just flesh them out. And I've got notebooks of unfinished ideas that I'm still working on. Like the closer sat there for 2 years. First Spun, the coin bin.
Yeah.
It sat there for 2 years because I couldn't figure out the method to make it to where they could sign a straight coin.
Wow.
Couldn't come to me. I couldn't get it. And then one day I was in the shower and I was like, I got it. So I jumped out, dried off, went and did it. I was like, it works. Called Ajar and Maxwell, told him I got this coin bin. Y'all want to shoot it?
Right.
Because I knew it was going to work. It wasn't like I'd just been working on it for a couple of days. I've been working on this thing for a couple of years. And I finally solved that little piece of the puzzle. It seems so easy when you do the effect, but it took forever to come up with. I remember that thing being a pain.
Wow. That's amazing. And the last trick that you brought out, the most recent trick, was the one of the last tricks that Sans Minds brought out, which was the Inspire deck, right?
Oh, yeah. I love the Inspire deck.
Yeah? Where did that? A lot of people are talking very, very positively about that. It's available, obviously, for most Magic dealers. What's where did that come from? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, I had this idea for a deck, and I talked to Will Sy, and he gave me some ideas, and we went back and forth, and we brainstormed on it. And he helped streamline and design my deck, and he nail my vision with it, and I'm really proud of the artwork and the goddess backs, and it looks great. Mm-hmm. And for those of you worried about it looking like a gimmick deck, you can actually put it in a red deck of bicycle cards and nobody will ever tell the difference. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's very close to the bicycle design. It's just goddess backs, and it looks really good though. It's so strong. I don't want to run it, but you can literally, I don't know if you can link a trailer to it.
Yeah, I can. Hang on a minute. Let's put the trailer in right now. Okay, I'll run the trailer here. And then I'll go to sync clap and you carry on talking, but they've just seen the trailer.
Yeah, there it goes. Now, basically, you can just delve in these people's minds and pull out the most intimate information, and not so much intimate, but just the most precise and accurate and factual information. And it's not like it's just a beautiful piece of magic, and it's best presented on stage, believe it or not, in front of 5,000 people. Because you can read 6 or 7 people's minds at once. And I mean, it's really, really, really strong. I highly recommend it. And it's my own product, and that's a shameless plug, but I highly recommend it. And I'm not getting anything off of it, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. But a lot of people have said really nice things about it. Well, let me ask you one more question, Morgan, which is, you've had an incredible career. You really have. I mean, you've performed in some incredible high-profile places. Like you say, you travel the world performing magic. You're highly in demand as Electra. You've released some of what is considered to be the best and most commercial magic and mentalism ever released to the magic community. Your legacy is set. If you decided to retire today and never perform again, your legacy is set. But obviously, you've just talked about how you've got a residency and You know, we're coming out of COVID and things are going back to some sort of normality. What's next? Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved yet that you want to do? Where do you see your career taking you moving forward, assuming that the world isn't going to turn to shit and COVID is going to become a thing of the past and we're going to go back to normal? What's next?
Well, I've got a new idea for a TV special that I'd like to see come to fruition, that I'd like to start pitching. I don't want to go into too much detail about it, but it's a new concept for a magic show. And I'd really like to see that happen. Other than that, just keep doing live shows and hopefully the world will open back up so I can start touring again.
Is there anywhere you've not lectured yet that you'd like to lecture, or anywhere you've not performed yet that you'd like to perform?
There's always places I want to go. I want to go anywhere I haven't been. So if I haven't been to your country, invite me. I want to go. Actually, I'll tell you where I want to go. I want to go to Cape Town.
Ah, yes.
I want to go to Cape Town, South Africa.
Wow, that'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. And are you planning on releasing any more magic?
I do, but I'm not going to get in a big hurry about it. I have some things in the pipeline that are there, but I'm going to focus on performing again since it's been so long since I've got to do that. And if the publishing opportunity comes up, I'll probably see where the negotiations go. And if it's good for both parties, I'll do it. And if not, I'll just keep performing. Because like you said, I got a residency now and I can travel and it's flexible and it's really nice.
And you mentioned earlier on that you've got two sons.
I do. One's 25. Ooh, that makes me feel old. And the other one is 15 this month.
And you say they're both into magic.
They both are. The first one, Caleb, he's 25. He's the youngest award-winning magician in the world, or was at one time. He won his first stage competition when he was 6.
What?
He beat adults.
What?
Yeah, he performed in the gala show. I created his act for him when he was 3, and he used to rehearse it for hours and hours a day. And at 6 years old, he beat adults in a magic competition.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And he actually, after he did that, he performed at the Venetian on their little stage at the Venetian where performers used to go and perform.
Yeah.
Street performers. And he would perform his act there during the day in the summer.
And is he a full-time magician as well now?
No. He's going to school to be a physics engineer.
Oh, okay.
My youngest son, he's more into the close-up stuff. He's to be honest with you, I think he's more into production, editing, being behind the camera.
Yeah.
I could see him being a director or editor when he grows up. Like I say, he's into magic. We were working on some card stuff last night. But, I mean, nothing like the oldest one. The oldest one actually done my illusion shows. He's done tons of shows with me. He was the one I thought would be a magic prodigy. He was a magic prodigy, honestly. But he was the one that I thought would take over if anybody did. And the youngest one, I really believe he'll be a director or something in film.
Wow. Well, that's, you know, it's obvious to me how important family is to you. From what you said,
it's everything to me. My wife and kids and parents are everything to me.
That's great. That's absolutely brilliant. Morgan, this has been an incredible interview. It really has. Like I said to you, I've been wanting to get you on here for a long time to talk about.
I've been wanting to come on here for a long time. I'm a big fan of the show and you as well.
Thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you. It really does. And I'm so glad you were able to find the time to come on here and were able to do it before. You know, I know you're going to get busy performing again. So it's been awesome having you on here.
And oh, thank you so much.
It's true. And, you know, thank you on behalf of every audience that I've ever bent a fork or a coin for. And they freaked out. Thank you so much. Because, like I said at the very beginning of this interview, you really did change the game when you created that routine. And you've continued to change the game since then. So I'm truly humbled.
Thank you.
It's true, man. On behalf of the whole Magic community, thank you for everything that you've done. It means a lot.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Now, guys, if you're watching this, I want you to leave a comment down below. I'm sure Morgan will see it. And have you got an online store that people can buy stuff from, Morgan? Or
I don't at the moment. I will soon.
Okay. So let me know when that happens and I'll promote it on the site.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Up until then, you can get a lot of Morgan stuff directly from Magic Shops. Some of the early stuff that we're talking about is exclusive to Penguin, isn't it? So the Spurn and the Opener and the Closer and the original.
Yeah.
That's all obviously still available through Penguin Magic, but you can get a lot of his other stuff from all.
I think you can get about everything in Penguin.
Yeah, well, they've become a lot of a bigger company than when you work with them. I mean, Penguin have become massive, haven't they?
Yeah. I think, Liquid Metal and Born to Perform had something to do with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Liquid Metal put them on the map, 100%. Really did. Really, really did. They've got a lot to thank you for.
And Born to Perform with those Pearlmen.
And I remember the early days of Penguin Magic where it was you, Oz, and Jay Noblezada.
Yep, that was us. That was the team.
Yeah, it was the three of you just like pumping out some amazing stuff over and over.
Oh, thank you. Those were the days. Those were the good old days. I miss it.
Yeah.
I wish you could go back to like it was then.
Things change, don't they? The whole Magic community changes. The industry changes. It's just weird. You have to adapt, I suppose, and move on.
They're so big now. Like, I can't. I mean, they're so big now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to even. I'm used to just talking to a Jar or Maxwell. I'm not used to going through different channels of communication to get to a Jar.
Oh, these days, you're never going to get to a Jar, are you? You're never going to go directly to a Jar. You're going to have to go through Eric Tate, Nick LaCapo, Sean Dunn. The list goes on and on and on. Yeah.
Before it was just a Jar. Hey, I'll be at your house in 10. You know, Maxwell, I'm on my way. I mean, it's meet you at the bridge where we always shot. I mean, and that's become quite the iconic shooting place, ironically, where we shot Liquid and Spun and a lot of my products. A lot of people like to shoot their products there now.
I've noticed that, yeah. But you set the scene with that. Your stuff was the first DVDs that were really shot in that sort of environment, in that sort of place.
Yeah. And the Liquid Metal trailer, my friend Greg Mulvey did that. I think it still looks good today.
Yeah. Some trailers age really badly, but that hasn't. That stood the test of time, 100%.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it still. I love that trailer. And I'm just thankful people like my magic and like that routine and supported me over the years. I'm really blessed to have a good fan base and met a lot of friends like you through this. So.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about magic. It brings people together all over this world in this weird and wonderful hobby brings people together. It really does. But no, man, it's been amazing. So make sure you support Morgan in every way that you can. leave a comment down below. And Morgan, I'm sure we'll see you on the channel again at some point in the future.
Hey, that'd be great. I'll come back anytime.
Thanks, man. Guys, thank you very much for watching. Like I say, leave a comment down below. And don't forget, I'm going to be back tomorrow with another video. So I'll see you then. Thanks very much for watching. My name's Craig from Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel. Magic TV. Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.